This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. And that involves Torin Jacobs, who's been involved in many organizations that advocate civilian review for police officers. Welcome to The Other Side of the News, Torin.
Welcome.
And explain to the listeners what are the groups you're involved with and what some of your history is.
Thank you, Bob. I don't know why I said welcome, because this is your show, but I meant to say I'm happy to be here, Bob. And yes, a lot of organizations, that's definitely true. I work with People's Justice Project, Ohio Student Association. You have OSU for Black Lives and Black Liberation. Been involved with Sylvester Ferguson this past year, doing the protests and rallies. So anywhere where I can lend my helping hand and brain, I often do that. And I started my own group last year, Columbus CPR. That's Columbus Citizens for Police Review. And so last year, we were focused on establishing a review board over the police. Well, it didn't turn out so well because we didn't have a lot of money and a lot of people willing to help us get that there, because doing a ballot initiative, I learned, takes tens of thousands of dollars and dedicated staff who can do this full time, and our small group of volunteers could not provide those things. But we're still advocating for our civilian review board and looking at other ways we can hold the police accountable to the people and not the state or the chief.
How well do you think the city council is doing under the current regime?
Well, I've been so I kind of dropped the ball in October, late October. I was teaching high school, and so I kind of took a step back from organizing because it was just too overwhelming. So I don't have all the details. I'm not completely up to date, but I'm going to take a wild stab here and say that they're just as terrible as they were back in October. So I'm pretty sure I'm accurate in that, and I'm pretty sure they're doing a terrible job. Because when I look at what's going on with issue one and how they're treating that, it's pretty obvious that city council is still out of touch, and they're always going to be out of touch, and I have no confidence in them whatsoever.
Well, since you brought it up, issue one, that vote is coming up on August 2nd. How do you stand on that issue?
I definitely support issue one, 100%, not only because I work with John personally, but
and by John, Torin Jacobs means John Beard?
Correct, absolutely. So John has been very helpful in getting us off our feet and writing a ballot initiative. So just in the facts of the case, you know, city council definitely needs to be broken up. And then John Beard, they put out a very good, I guess, critique of how city council is still too small. And we're one of the only cities that has a population of our size that still has an at-large system of representing the city, and it's inadequate. And yes, there are some problems that could arise. You know, Republicans could come in and sweep certain neighborhoods and things like that. But as far as I'm concerned, we need more Democratic representation on city council, because right now it's a political machine that just blocks out anyone else from getting their voices heard.
Well, it's a one-party system, and you know, I think they're trying to say that in that case, you know, a Republican might get elected, but what could they do? Give a quarter of $1 billion away to the richest families? That's already being done by the Democratic one-party system.
Indeed. One of my friends is on the area commission, not area commissioners. What's that thing that they did with Yes We Can, that campaign?
Oh, the Central Committee.
Right.
The Democratic Party Central Committee.
So he's in the committee, and he was at a meeting not too long ago. And, you know, basically the city council or the people who were there were just saying how they couldn't the established Democrats at that meeting were saying they couldn't afford this and they couldn't do that and it was going to cost too much money. And my friend on the committee just says, you guys sound like a bunch of Republicans. Like, which side are you on? So it's like what you just said, too. Yeah, it's a one party system. The current Democrats are just like Republicans, or what I call diet Republicans.
Well, this is Torin Jacobs in the studio. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. I'm your host, Bob Fetrakis, and Torin is an advocate for the civilian review of police. Do you have some idea how you would like to see that develop?
Well, as far as the civilian review board goes, it needs to be definitely implemented by grassroots organizations who worked on policing issues. Oftentimes, civilian review boards...
Would you allow Black Lives Matter to be involved?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing because Black Lives Matter isn't like this hardcore group. It's a name. It's a plea.
I don't know. I've been listening to these Republicans out of Cleveland.
Right, and, we're terrorists now.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
So it's like I work with Black Lives Matter people and I help with their protests, but I don't consider myself a Black Lives Matter activist. I mean, I think it's just a name applied to people who care about certain issues. And then some people do take it a step further and then start a branch under that name. But there are just so many different groups who will chant Black Lives Matter, but they have their own organization under their own name and they'll put their own events on. So it's kind of weird, you know, how society is pinning everyone as Black Lives Matter, this and that. But it's just kind of a banner that people kind of put themselves on. And when people do Black Lives Matter events in Columbus, they don't contact the president of this or the local captain of that chapter. They just do it, and they call it Black Lives Matter. Something that's so decentralized, I hate to say that, you know, we're under, you know, that kind of thing. Unless I was actual somebody who started a branch, and I'm not that person. But I do support what Black Lives Matter is doing, especially raising awareness around police brutality. Even though I don't consider myself particularly a Black Lives Matter activist. You'll see me at a rally, but I like to put myself in my own category. Did I answer that question?
And Torin Jacobs, could you explain that category to our listeners?
Well, yeah, I think Black Lives Matter definitely, I mean, they definitely branched out now. They're focusing a lot more on policy, which is a nice thing. With our group, like I said, we're not going to host.
And what is your group now?
So it's still Columbus Citizens for Police Review. So we had one goal, which is building a civilian review board. Black Lives Matter, very broad, the things they want to tackle, right? So our thing was just focused on one issue, which was a review board. And now we're kind of expanding that into looking at all different types of solutions to solving the police problem. So not just through review boards, but different other policies. And then also, how can communities come together to police themselves to reduce the role of police in society? Because I think that's... And even Obama acknowledged this, one of the few things he's done right when it comes to this policing issue, which he said, we've used our police to solve too many societal problems. And I agree with them 100% on that. Homelessness, drug problems, drug addiction, domestic violence, homelessness, we use the police to solve all these problems.
Mental
illness, absolutely. We use the police to solve these issues, and police are hammers. You know, they don't have to be hammers. In our current society, they are the hammer, and you don't take a hammer to a mentally ill person's head or a homeless person's head. We need softer, more comprehensive solutions that'll solve that issue. So, yes, agree with Obama saying that police do too much, and I think communities need to come together to have a safety net for those people who are mentally ill. And can we devise a way to handle, say if we're on a block and you're on your local block, if there's a domestic violence issue, is there a way the community can intervene before calling the police? So these are types of issues that we want to look at to see if it's possible for the community to actually police themselves.
And what do you mean by that, the community policing themselves?
Well, that means that there's several layers of people who are not law enforcement that certain issues could go through before it does get to law enforcement. So there are certain issues that obviously are too big to handle. Let's say there's a hostage situation, a man's armed and he's got his wife and kids in the house. Obviously that's a police situation. The community can come in and try to work with the police to kind of talk that down. But like I say, if there's a problem with thefts going on, can the community come up with a way to devise a list of all the thefts, organize the data, and then come up with neighborhood patrols where people can set up and walk around the neighborhood to make sure that thefts aren't occurring? Is there someone with technical skills in the neighborhood that can install camera technology so people can mount cameras on their front porch to see if someone's going in their house or not? So the whole idea is like looking to people around us to see if they can help make the community safer. And this is all unarmed, of course. We don't want to have George Zimmerman's running around chasing after people, trying to be the law. This is more of, you know, this is a problem going on in the community coming together, people on that block coming together and figuring out how they can solve it. And so the biggest positive thing that came out of this is actually building a community, because too often we don't know who our neighbors are. And I think even when a neighborhood watch program is not you still don't know who your neighbors are. And you see those signs everywhere. This is a neighborhood watch block and everything. And I don't know when these people meet and all that other kind of stuff. So the whole idea is like just bringing people together to talk about keeping each other safe. And then also the bigger goal is to make sure everyone knows each other's names. And I think that's what's gonna be the main component of self-policing, is just knowing who your neighbors are, so you're not scared of your neighbors. And you're watching out for them, they're watching out for you, especially for house sitting as well. You know, do we have to call some outside cousin from another city or from another neighborhood, suburb, to come watch your house? Can we rely on our neighbors to do that? That's also a form of policing, just calling your next-door neighbor to watch your house while you're gone.
All right. Torin Jacobs in the studio. I'm Bob Fetrakis, bringing you the other side of the news. He's advocating Citizens for Police Review here in Columbus. When you hear people saying, particularly what appear to be white people, so I'm scared, you know, all lives matter.
Yeah.
What do you say to them?
I don't talk to those people. I just ignore them. But I mean, it is very annoying, especially watching the RNC speeches and the whole all lives matter thing. You know, it's just a hypocritical statement, because if all lives did matter, you would be on the picket line with us. You'd be on High Street marching with us. You'd be at the park with us if all lives really did matter. But it's not the case at all. What I want those people to understand is that by advocating for black lives, you are advocating for all lives. When we look at those in the lowest total, on the lowest rung of the ladder, we're protecting everyone else above the ladder, right? And so the whole idea is if we attack these problems that are affecting black people in urban communities, we're also protecting white people from police brutality. And now what we've seen is that white people have stood silent when Rodney King happened and when other high-profile abuse cases have happened. And now white people are getting their butts kicked by the police as well. So there's a great – I met a guy, former sheriff out in Utah, the white guy, and the neighborhood that he policed, they were all mostly white. But the SWAT team that he helped create, he retired later on. That SWAT team killed his son-in-law, and he had mental health issues, and they murdered him. The movie's called Peace Officer. Our group hopes to show that film pretty soon. But I met the guy who was a star of that film.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was the name of the film again?
Peace Officer. It's supposed to be on Netflix by now, but I haven't seen it yet, so who knows when that's going to be released. But I don't think the DVD should be out by now. Anyway, I was going to say it too. So yes, this guy, he had a son-in-law murdered by the police. He had a mental health breakdown, and he held himself hostage in his car. And anyway, the police, the SWAT team ran in there and threw multiple flash grenades at him and shot him to death when he didn't need to be killed. But basically, the film goes through several cases of the Utah police. I forget what city this is, so I'm saying the Utah. But it's a certain city, and I don't remember which one. Anyway, the SWAT team goes in multiple houses, and they're shooting people to death when they shouldn't be. And so there's a guy who had they did a no-knock raid in the guy's house at 3 in the morning. He doesn't know what's going on. He has a golf club in his hands. The police flash a light in his face and then just shoot him center mass and kill him. And multiple stories like that. So what I'm trying to get at here is that because we ignore what was going on in L.A. In the 80s, late 70s and the early 80s with the SWAT teams and how people's civil rights were just so blatantly violated, white people didn't ignore it. Oh, those guys are gangbangers or criminals. You know, let them have the hammer. Well, now the hammer's coming to white people's doorsteps. And we're seeing that all across the country, especially after a terrorist attack will occur. The Boston bombing situation was a good example of police just taking over people's houses, things like that. So the whole idea is that if we would have cared about those who were marginalized in society first, it's less likely that you yourself in a higher position is going to be a victim of abuse. So we have to focus, even though we don't walk in that person's shoes, we have to be concerned. We're all connected in this. So by looking at black lives, by saying black lives matter, you're acknowledging that all lives do matter. And we all can see through it when you say all lives matter, because, once again, we don't see you out there protesting or advocating or even talking to black people. So get your head out of your butt.
All right, some wise advice, sage advice from Torin Jacobs, Citizens for Police Review here in Columbus, Ohio. What about claims by the police that we don't have these type of problems in Columbus?
Oh, yeah, we most certainly do. I mean, there was, I can't believe I forgot this guy's name, but he was ran off his bike and also shot.
OB Shepherd.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he was one high profile guy before Henry Greene happened recently. So, yes, Columbus definitely has a history of these abuse problems. And you had Dale Phillips as well, former law enforcement, who was attacked by the Columbus Police Department on the west side. So, yes, we have multiple names we can give you of abuse cases that happened within the city. Unfortunately, they weren't captured on camera. And if they were, it probably would have been a different story. But, yes, Bob, you have a list of names who were also people who were killed by the police. And we know several cases of unarmed people who were killed by the police. And Henry Greene was a recent story now. With he was killed by two plainclothes officers, and he died unneedlessly in the city in the Linden area.
This is Bob Fitragus bringing you the other side of the news. You're listening to WCRS 98.3, 102.1. I'm in the studio with Torin Jacobs, an advocate for Citizens for Police Review. He wants a police review board conducted by average, normal citizens. But I was just looking at some of these people who were killed. Julie Claudel, for example, who died on October 25th, 2013, shot by Officer Jeffrey Baker, a sergeant. I'm reading why the police were involved, and this comes from the Columbus Dispatch. Her husband was out of town, called the police for a welfare check on his wife. She opened the door with her wrist slashed, holding a handgun. Police shot her. So, someone's feeling suicidal. You go to their house.
And you shoot
them. It seems like, you know, it's kind of a one-trick pony. Right, you referred to him as the hammer. But Jonathan Rogers, December 2nd, 2013, again, when they go to his house, here's the notes on the incident. The officer initiated contact because he reported seeing a man pointing a shotgun at motorists. Chase ensued. And that there was a report of an aggravated developmentally disabled man, and the police shot him. Okay, and he didn't have a gun on him; he had a knife. So developmentally, hi, we've got an agitated, aggravated, developmentally disabled man. So you show up, he's got, you know, you shoot him, you find a knife on him. I'm just wondering whether there's not some other methods, perhaps a team with body armor that could have rushed him, the developmentally disabled guy who was agitated, and maybe not killed him. It seems like if your loved ones are having any sort of mental problems, which many people have,
right,
or they are developmentally challenged, you don't want to call the police.
You
because
don't.
The police have one solution, apparently, to dealing with people who are like that. They tend to shoot them.
That's right. And so, you know, I heard the Chief Jacobs talking about doing implicit bias training and doing different training with their officers. So I don't know if she's... And I know they undergo mental health training as well, but like I said, I don't know what she's doing currently to make sure that all the officers are adequately trained to deal with people who are experiencing mental health issues. And so, yeah, nationwide, that's definitely been a huge issue, especially I think there was a case in Texas. I don't remember the state anymore. So many of these cases, you kind of forget the small details, but you definitely remember the moment. But yeah, the son was having a mental breakdown, and they called the police, and he had a screwdriver in his hand, and this was caught on tape, and they shot him to death with a screwdriver, because I guess, a screwdriver against two officers with handguns, they're just out, they're outmanned, they're out, at everything, so they had to shoot the guy. And so I don't know, it goes back to, if getting people who know the person and to not call the police if that person is having problems. Like, can we call, once again, community policing, community control policing, can we call people in the neighborhood to come over and talk to this person? Can there be a mental health officer if the person has a pretty diagnosed history of having mental health issues? Can we call the mental health officer over to talk to this person instead of calling the police officer? And I think that's one thing that we definitely could do, is just having someone who doesn't carry a weapon, but then going out to people who have mental health issues. And if the problem is that severe, well, of course, the officer would be right there to come in and solve, you know, and engage. But yeah, there are multiple solutions we have to make sure this stuff doesn't happen. But for some reason, the police departments don't want to do that. Or maybe the officers don't want to do that.
All right. When we think about the situation, are we expecting our police, Torin Jacobs, to be like Bobbies in England and they won't have any weapons?
Well, no, Bob. I think our nation's pretty different from over there in England. We have, what, 300 million weapons out there circulating? Or forgot, I don't know the details on that number. But, yeah, I just know we have about 300 million weapons in this country. Or 300 million people. But can you correct me on that? Do we have that many weapons, 300 million?
Where am I getting that number from? Some estimates we have far more than that because
okay.
The average adult, is some estimates, I know when I lived in the city of Detroit,
yes,
it's estimated the average adult had 4 weapons.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I would argue the city was in such bad shape.
Yeah.
Is people probably felt they needed 4 weapons if you allow that type of crime, that type of abject poverty mm-hmm. in a whole city to rot around you. So
yeah.
We have a lot of weapons out there.
Yeah, so we have way too many weapons in this country. And so, we can't. Just walk. We can't have. I think it's a good idea to necessarily have police be unarmed at all times. They can be armed, but the question is, do you have to be armed always going into every single situation? And so maybe it's also having that weapon on them, I just think, makes it more easier to use the weapon. And so I think if you get a call in where someone is, let's say John Crawford, let's say, the person, we think he has a gun, he's walking in the store. Well, can we have better assessment of the situation rather than just walking in on the guy and then shooting him in the back? You know, stuff like that needs to stop. And so you don't necessarily have to disarm every single police officer, but is there a way to send in maybe unarmed officers first, send in an assessment officer to make sure that the call they got is actually accurate? That's another problem, too. We have Tamir Rice, where someone says he has a toy gun. It's not related to the dispatcher that he has a toy gun, and the cops pretty much roll up on him and do a drive-by. So that fear gets instilled into the police officers, and they act irrationally. So Tamir Rice, John Crawford, same thing, and then even with Alton Sterling, says this guy has a gun. He's selling CDs, and you know the police have enough justification to kill him as well. So I would advocate that. Police do not need to be unarmed, but it's a better idea to send in unarmed officers first to assess the situation and then make the determination, do we need to send in armed officers or not? Not every single call needs to have an armed officer on the spot.
Well, today's date is July 20th. It's Wednesday, and you're planning an event this Saturday, obviously the 23rd, July 23rd. What time is that event? Where is it? And what will happen there?
So that is at 3:00 this Saturday, 3 to 5. And we are going to be in the main auditorium at the Columbus Metropolitan Library, the library that just reopened. It was renovated for a long time. So we'll be in there. And the discussion will be about basically a presentation by me about the issues with policing and how we can work about getting solutions. So there are a list of solutions that we can pursue through policy and through community building. And we're going to look at those types of solutions. And then we're going to have yours truly, Mr. Bob Fetrakis, talk about the history of cop watching in Columbus and knowing your rights. And then we'll have one of our other members, Will Delphia, talk about how to film the police properly and what technology is out there to do it the most effectively. And also the consequences of filming. I think that's also an important aspect that we talk about, is that the guy who taped Eric Garner is now facing 4 years in prison because they found a bunch of gun and drug. They trumped up a bunch of charges on this guy, and they all came out of nowhere or somewhere after he coincidentally filmed the death of Eric Garner. So he's going to prison. The young man who filmed Alton Sterling was also facing. They've digged up his history and found some traffic violation, and then tried to throw him in jail for that. So they, you know, when you tape the police and it does go viral, be prepared for them to come after you. That's the lesson we need to learn.
And again, NWA said it, I think, correct. Tape the police. Maybe they didn't say that. Just another guy with a badge and a gun. So Saturday, July 23rd, the main library starting at 3 o'clock.
3 sharp.
Now, will anyone else be there speaking?
There'll be a lot of other groups in Columbus doing the work that we're also engaged in, working around police brutality, accountability, and community building. So I don't know. They definitely have the invitation to come and speak if they would like to during the end to advocate for their group. But so far, I know there'll be attendance, but I don't think they're going to speak. But for people who do come, there'll be all their information will be out there. So if you do want to link with the group, they'll be right there. Because we're all doing different things in the city, you know, and so but we're all working together, which is nice. And it's finally time that this happens, that we all work together to solve these problems, because it's going to take every single solution in the book to solve this. Changing police culture is one of the hardest things to ever do in this society. Police have been doing their thing since their inception. And so, yeah, trying to turn that back is going to be the fight of the century.
And particularly since it's tied up with the prison industrial complex.
Indeed.
You know, where with the greatest amount of people locked up of any nation on earth. And what's happening on August 1st with Dale Phillips, a man that I wrote about, Torin Jacobs?
So, yeah, Dale Phillips was a former law enforcement, and he was abused by the Columbus Police Department. They messed his arm up. He got scratches on his face. He had to go to the hospital for his arm. And, yeah, they put a bunch of charges on this man and for him getting beat up by the police officers. And so he won on an appeal, and now he's back again for some more charges. So his last court date should be August 1st at 1:30. And so we're going to support Dale and let him know the community stands behind him. And it's just so nice to see former law enforcement see things from not that he got abused, but to see things from the side of the people. It's just such a rare thing. So we definitely support Dale. And Dale, we've had conversations with him privately. He's definitely on board with changing police culture. And one last thing, too, I want to say is that changing police culture also saves police lives. People are so angry at the police, these ex-military guys, people go out and shoot them, is because we're not seeing justice being done. When police change, when the culture changes, when the chief decides with the people, people are less angry at the police and they trust them more. That's what's going to make policing more safer in this community. So if you're a police officer, you have a vested interest in listening to the people, because you're going to be less likely to be hurt by the people when they trust you. So we're here for everybody.
All right. Thanks a lot, Torin Jacobs. Citizens for Police Review. Thanks for being on the other side of the news.
Thank you, Bob.
And again, July 23rd, 3 p.m., come to the library, the main library in Columbus, Ohio. Hope to see you there. This is the other side of the news.
For more information on our group, go ahead and check us out at Columbus CPR. So go to Facebook, type in Columbus CPR in the search, and you'll find our group, like our page. Thanks.